Okay, folks, good evening and welcome to the Carolina Bible Group Bible Study Voice Room tonight. And we're still kicking along here in the book of Ezekiel. And if you don't mind, excuse me, turn to Ezekiel again, to Ezekiel 28. And we've been discussing for a week or two about the Prince of Tyre, or Tyrus, and the King of Tyrus. And it's something that we find here in Ezekiel 28 that gives us, what can I say? It gives us information, I guess, that we either don't normally think about or haven't really put a lot of emphasis on study in this. And it is the adversary of God that we're talking about here. And I think it's very, very important that we need to find out as much as we can about this opponent or this accuser or this adversary or whatever you want to call it, because it shows up in different ways and different places in Scripture. And so we're probably going to learn maybe a little more about it tonight than we have seen before. And a lot of this, these things that I talk about are going to be, some of it is going to be my opinion, and you can or cannot agree with it. I am not asking for agreement. I am just telling you what I have found. And if you don't agree with it, that is okay. If you do, then maybe it will open your eyes, to a little more of what God has shown us about, this being that He created, we don't know when. We really don't know when. Okay, this is going to be study 111 in our study on walk, and we are going to talk a little bit about walk, believe it or not, in Scripture tonight if we get that far. And, well, I think we won't have to go but one verse to get involved in that. But, nevertheless, it gives us quite a bit of information, and some of this information I had to go to outside sources to get it, meaning the covering that Satan has is not a cloth covering, and it's not a skin covering, but it is a precious stone covering. And I think that it was when he did it, when God did it, this one that we call now Satan had another position in God's world. And I want to read you the note on verse 17. We're going to start at verse 13, but I want to read you the note on 17, because when you get 13, 14, 15 and 16, 17 and 18 becomes kind of self-explanatory. And 19 too, as far as that goes. But this gives us a little pulling back the curtain, if you will, and seeing something that God had performed maybe early on that we don't know anything about before Genesis 1-1 or Genesis 1-2. Because sometime during that time, Satan had another job. And then God gave him a job when the earth was brought out of the water because water cannot destroy these super terrestrial beings that God has created. Water doesn't really have, other than a holding power, it doesn't have anything else on them other than holding power. So here's a being from another era, if you will, or another time, that is there now with a new job. But he's been demoted. And I have never thought about this before until now, but Brother Larry Dyer told us years ago that in his study he felt like that Lucifer or Satan had the job of prime minister in God's realm. And as prime minister, he was the go-between or the mediator between the angelic order, the heavenly order, between the heavenly order and God. And if anything needed to be done or put forth or carried out or whatever, it was God, it came from God through Satan. Because at that point in time, he wasn't bad. He was good. And so you have
the anointed cherub
that covers. You have the beauty of one that nothing else had the beauty of. And so here we are. We talked a little bit about that last week in the 12th verse of Ezekiel 28, that he was full of wisdom and he was perfect in beauty. Well, perfect means complete or all in, if you will. There was nothing lacking to this one. But now, in that realm, wherever it was before the earth was cast into the water, there was iniquity found in Satan because of his brightness and because of his wisdom. The closest thing that I can find to a humanistic thing here would be ego. Oh, yeah. But now we're not talking about a human or a superhuman. We're talking about a super creature, rather than a superhuman. And we will find words in this scripture that denotes the things that a human has or that God has. But we wouldn't know, or we can't find out really how Satan uses that in that respect. But he talks about a heart, that his heart was lifted up, And a couple of other things that seem to be really out of place as far as Satan goes. But now, we know him as an angel of light. Eve knew him as an angel of light. And before we get too far, I don't know where I told you this or not. This is study 111. This is December the 7th, 2016. It's been 75 years since the events of Pearl Harbor. And this is the day that happened that our president at that time said this is the day that will live in infamy. And so it will always be remembered, I'm sure. Because there were many, many hundreds, even thousands of people that lost their life. And especially on the USS Arizona. I believe there was 1,100.
There's one left. It was
okay, there was 1,179 that day lost their life, I think. And, but that's, you know, that's history. But we still need history, and we need to go back We need to go back to history and look at history. So turn with me to the verse 13 and Ezekiel 28. I have reason for a lot of water tonight for some reason or other. And I want to read verse 17 first. Or the note on 17 in the Companion Bible. And 17 says, has corrupted or didst corrupt. And so there's a point that was made there. And I want you to listen to what was said. When this took place, we are not told. It was before Genesis 3:1. And the only time seems to have been between verses 1 and verses 2 of Genesis 1 and may have been the cause of the overthrow or the Katabole cosmos. And it says, see note on Matthew 13:35. So I agree with that note there, and I think it goes all the way back to when God put the earth in the water or in the deep and left it as a baptismal tool to wash it, make it clean again, or to clean as possible. And, of course, being in the water, we don't know how long it was in the water. But we're going to talk about that a little bit because, you know, we think about, when we think about the earth being overflowed with water, we want to, first of all, you know, go back to the time in Genesis and with the time of Noah. But, you know, all of the earth evidently was under the water because I don't know if you ever saw the series on the Weather Channel that plays on the National Weather Channel. But they have one every while. It's called The Prospectors, or, you know, looking for these precious gems. And we're going to get involved in the precious gems here in a minute. But up on top of the Rocky Mountains at 14,300 feet, these people get claims to stake out. And they go out there and they look for aquamarine. And if you look in all the books that I have, if you look in there when it talks about aquamarine, it talks about seawater. And when you go to look at the clear and the blue tint on the aquamarine, and you see that it's clear, and if seawater was the source or the basic source for this being under great pressure for a great length of time, then it looks like that the salt in the water would mar the crystals that it produces. But when you look, and when they're finding these crystals, and every one of those people will tell you that whenever they start digging up there, they will see a line under these stones, and I call them a field of stones. And there'll be a line under there that's a mineral line, and they follow it to a pocket. And they will go and follow this pocket as far as they can go. And sometimes they'll go to five or six places to where they find all kinds of gems in these pockets that's been formed in these pockets. And when that line runs out, They know to go somewhere else to look because they have run out with that pocket because I think the heat or the extreme pressure or whatever was involved in God's way of making these things, there had to be a ductwork or a system of transferring some of these minerals out of there that these could become pure. Now, you might disagree with that, but they do that. And I have no reason to disbelieve them because they're making their living out of these things. And this shows up in some of these gems, and we'll get into that in a minute too. Let's go back and read 13. It says, "Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering. The sardis, the topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, and the carbuncle, and gold. The workmanship of thy taborates and of thy pipes were prepared in thee, in the day that thou wast created." Now, we've got a lot to talk about in this verse of Scripture here. Now, I want to mention this, and I went and looked it up, and it talks about the adversary of God. And the adversary of God, we know, is Nakash or Lucifer or Satan. But there are two other words here that goes along with it. One of them is the opponent. And guess what? When we look up the word devil, it is mentioned 18 times in the Old Testament, and it's number 7854. And he's always known as the opponent. He's the opponent of God. Especially in the book of Job. You know, you get that front and center with you in Job because God and Satan are contending for Job. And Job is kind of caught in the middle. And you know, that's another whole study within itself. But then you find in the New Testament that the devil is mentioned 35 times in the New Testament, and it's 45:67 there, and he is mentioned as the accuser. And so remember this as we go down, you know, down through this study in Ezekiel here, because it'll come a little more clear to you as we go along in this. So let's look at the first part of that. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Okay. The note there in Eden says this: there is no evidence of a legend, but a reality. Satan, the Nakash, or the Shining One, was there. The note on Genesis 3:1 and Appendix 19, which we read in its entirety last week, we find that Eve was smitten with his beauty as an angel of light. We're going to talk about that. And in 2 Corinthians 11:14, Paul talks about him and deferred to him as one possessing this wisdom and believed his power to make good on his promises. And it says there's no mention of Eden since Genesis 4:16 and Isaiah 51:3 until here, and none here until after 31:9 and 31:16, 31:18 and 36:35 and again Isaiah 51:3, Joel 2:3 and Appendix 92. Okay, so thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. So let's just read on. This is added to leave us no doubt as to what this meant by Eden, and to show that it was no mere summer residence of the prince of Tyre, but it was the garden of Genesis 2, 8 through 15. Then it talks about precious stone. That again refers to Genesis 2, 11, 12. And the tabrets of the drums and the timbrels, and all this we'll talk about when we get there. And it said, in the day that thou wast created. I think in the day is a bad translation too. Because in before time, we don't know how God judged space or distance. We just don't know.
Even if it was time.
We can only associate it with what he did with Adam when he restored the earth and made days, times, and seasons. Okay. So, it was, that is another thing that we, don't really know about. In the day that thou wast created. And so that gives us the understanding that he was not begotten by man or born of woman, and this can only refer to Satan himself. So there's a lot of information right there that that gives us a lot of area for thought. So thou hast been in Eden. So he says, you at one time was in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering. The precious there for the stones means valuable and costly. Now, the valuable or the costly of gems refer basically to their quality and their brightness, their color, quality and color. Okay, and some of them are clear and doesn't have color. But that doesn't mean that they don't emit forth certain lights as light is given unto them. And we got to remember that now we're talking about the angel of light here. And that light comes from within. It's not something that shines down on him and gives him his brightness.
External light.
It is internal light. And that's something, again, that we have no idea about. Because God did that for him. And I can't give you a reason why. I really can't do that. But he said every precious stone, and stone there is 68, and it is aben in the English. And it means a building stone or a building set. Or if you want to get more concise or precise with it, it can mean the corner or a cornerstone. Something that is worked off of, okay? You know, if you set a cornerstone, then that is on the foundation, and all of the rest of the building is built upon what we call that corner. And it talks about the body of Christ and him being the chief corner. That is pretty self-explanatory in that situation. Every precious stone was that covering. And so we don't want to get clothing involved in this covering because he was covered completely with precious stones. It doesn't say anything about skin, doesn't say anything about God making him any clothing of any kind. He had his royal robe upon himself at all the times. There was no need for it to change. That's the way he was made. That's the way he was. And he had the fire within. Don't forget that he has internal fire, okay? So, we get down now to the colors. The Sardis in the Strong's is number 124, and it's odium. Odium. And it means redness or ruddy. It's some of it is not really blood red in color like blood would be, but it is in a greater sense red or a brownish red. And I want you to listen to the, it talks about ruddy, and it also mentions the word ruby there, because part of it is like a ruby. And a ruby is 6443 in the Strong's when you look it up. And guess what? It is in the English. Pawnee. Where do we get a ruddy or red man? That word is Pawnee. Okay, so, and then the next part of that is the word garnet. So it can be redness or ruddy, ruby or garnet. And it can be rubies is plural in the sense. And a ruby is round with angles to emit light in different directions with a face that appears to turn from inward to outwardly. So when the light goes through it, it appears to turn from inward to outward immediately. And it, so it gives you a sense of great profusion and great color. Now what we're going to describe here, I hate to use the word, but it is a supernatural Christmas tree in a sense, because he's going to emit all these lights from within, from all over. Now this is when he disguises himself as an angel of light. Beautiful. Wonderful. Eve couldn't take her eyes off this thing. Okay, now that's the Sardis. Now we go down to the topaz. It's 6357 in the Strong's. And the English part of that is pit dog. And no doubt the word pit, it comes from where you find aluminum silicate. And the stuff that makes up aluminum is found in pits, and when it's processed, it as a from the sand portion of itself, because that's what silicate is. It is a sand portion of that, kind of like we would call glass, some type of glass. Okay, and it usually comes out yellow in its gems. And so that's your yellow color that we talked a little bit about last week. We had the red. Now we've got the yellow, the topaz. And also the beryl is, it is a silicate too. But let's go down to the next one. It says, and the diamond. And the diamond is 3095. And the English part of that is Yahalame. And it means hardness. Because diamond has a hardness that can overcome many other substances on the earth. And it can be broken down and put into all kind of cutting apparatuses. And, you know, you can have diamond impregnated stuff, and it will cut just about anything that man can make.
Our blades that we put on our file saws at work.
Yeah.
Have like little tiny diamond dust. It's just a piece of steel disc with the dust embedded in this adhesive around it. And it'll cut right through a brick, a tile, whatever.
Anything like that, yeah.
Keep water on it.
Okay. And it's hard, it has this hardness as its main thing. But when you look at the rest of it, and Strong's gives this, and it means also to beat down, that you can use it, you know, to, to do in other kinds of, all kinds of metals, I guess. But it also could mean other things. And it means to overcome, and it's generally clear. But when you think about it, and I'll just throw this in, and this is free. Usually when you think of a diamond, you think of a guy getting down on his knee and giving a ring to a young lady. And what he's doing here is what it says in the Strong's, to beat down or to overcome. He is bringing her, he is on his knees, but he is going to bring her down to his level with this diamond, because he is making a promise that what she has, he's going to take. And that they are going to become one. And so that gives you the sense of overcoming. It gives the sense of two becoming one. Does that make sense? And that reference to that. And generally diamonds, they can be off colors. They can have the hues of the rainbow, but in the general sense, they're clear.
They have chocolate diamonds now, isn't it?
Huh?
They have chocolate-looking
diamonds. Yeah, right. But, you know, the normal way you find them is basically the color is much more of a clear arrangement. But, you know, they can be things added and put to it and make it very different. Then you got the beryl. And the beryl is 8658. And that word is kind of like, and it's a silicate too. A beryl is also called emeralds. And, it is a silicate also, but the word there is Tarsus. And that's like Saul of Tarsus. It's, I guess, the first were found in the area that the Apostle Paul was from.
Tarsus.
Okay. It can show up as emeralds. And it can show up as aquamarine. And certainly, it can be pale. It can be bluish. It can be green. And it can have the hues of the rainbow in colors. Aquamarine can run the range of the whole gamut. They don't necessarily have to be clear. And this aquamarine, like I said, They find these things on these high mountains in the United States. I don't know where else in the world. They find them evidently in the mountains of Tarsus in the Middle East. They evidently they found them there too. But I call it the rock piles, you know, in the because up there it looks like the only thing you are up there is just a bunch of stones, and you don't really see a whole lot of earth under them. You know, they throw these rocks around and find these places where these little lines run, and they follow these lines to these pockets. And you can get several different kinds of gems out of these pockets. They have been formed there, evidently, under great pressure or great heat. And all this work that God does with these things, you know, they come out to be this sort of thing. And so they could be called emeralds. And they could be on the angel of light here. So, they radiate the rays or the brightness of fire too, in the very same way that all these other things do. Then you get down to the onyx, 77:18, and that's Shoham. And a pale green color, usually round, and usually used as a pendant in jewelry. And these pale green colors come in a variation of hues of green. And they're just a lot of different greens, because if you look at leaves, if you look at the woods or the forest, and you get somewhere where you can look down and you can see in the summertime or the springtime, when all these trees are putting out these leaves, you see the different hues of green that make up God's great land. And you realize that there are many, many, many varieties of green, and I think this is kind of the way the onyx is, of 77:18. Then you get down to the jasper, and the jasper is 34:71. I don't know if I could pronounce this in the English or not. Yashifa. Yashifa, 34:71, and it means to polish, and it's actually, the jasper is colored quartz. It can be red, yellow, brown, and then when you look in the Bible, and if you look in the New Testament, in the Strong's, they call it a green ornamental stone that situates or gives to foolish talk, silliness, absurdity, or stupidness. That this is how it's been used down through the years. It shows that you know, if someone is wearing that, they're not very bright in that sense. And I thought that was kind of unusual. But it makes up part of the covering of Satan also. Then you have the sapphire, 5601. And it can be white, it can be deep blue, or it can be clear. And it is a gem with capabilities to mar other substances. It's not as hard as the diamond, but it certainly can be used to score or to inscribe or to mark anything as one's own. That if you had this quartz in that sense, you could just about inscribe your name on anything that you had. Okay? In that thing. It said it can be white, deep blue, or clear. And then you down to the emerald. Now we talked about the emerald up there with the barrel a while ago. And it's 5306. And it's Nofek. N-O-F-E-K. Nofek. It means to glisten or shine, usually known as a garnet or a deep red garnet. And so we find that some of these things, according to who you talk to, can be kind of interchanged in this sense. Then you go to the carbuncle, which is, it's got two meanings. And Balrog is 1300. I didn't put down 1304. But it is also deep red. And it is a gem. Or it shows up as a gleam of lightning or burning light. And it can also have a variety of colors because it has glass-like silicate layers in it. And it is most costly. This type of emerald, I guess, or the carbuncle is really more costly than the other part of it, which is the emerald. And then you have the gold, which is 2091, and it's Zoab, and it means to shimmer, a soft yellow metal as the color of oil or as the color of a sunrise sky. And there you have all the attributes of Satan's covering in a nutshell. And when the fire within, when he fires himself up with the fire from within, he can put on a show with all of these beautiful, beautiful things. And it looks like there's lightning coming from him, all these kind of things. That he is made up of. And you know, we said that Eve had never seen God because she had walked in the garden with him, but his spirit, she couldn't see him. And it says that no one or no man has seen God at any time. And so her and Adam didn't see God either. They just, they knew his presence was there and they heard him and all this, but I don't think they ever saw him. So this was the first thing that showed up, to her. And, he had been in the garden of God and guess what? He was placed there as the cherub that covereth. So evidently, along with that body, he had some wings that he could spread out. I always thought that Adam was given dominion, but Satan is there to guard the garden. He's already there. But guess what? Here's one that was the prime minister of God, evidently went into the deep with the earth, and he came out with the earth, but he was given a lower position in God's place. He was the cherub take care of the garden. And so God had lowered his position down to this. He was the one that wanted the place of the Son of God in the side to the north, wherever it was in the being. What would be the first thing in his mind when God gave him this position? To be the cherub of the garden, to guard the garden. Now, we understand that the cherubim, after Satan was sent away, evidently, or went away from the garden, and after Adam and Eve left the garden, the cherubim was put there with a flaming sword that turned every way, so it went from this mechanical thing, it went from the cherub, the single one, to the one with the four sides that guarded the garden from then on. So you see, he had a demotion in who he was and what he was. If he had an ego factor, like man has an ego factor, what would that have done for him? Would he have tried to figure it out immediately how to taint God's new creation? This man and woman who could father children on their own without God doing the creating, so they could procreate in that sense. He says, I've got to get involved in this.
And that was something until he decided to go against God's set of rules for his body. When he says in Jude that he kept not his
first
slave to lift his own habitation, he changed that body that he inhabited into something different.
So he could change or disguise.
Wasn't God's will anymore, it's my will.
Yeah, and go back and forth. And so by him getting involved with Eve and Eve getting involved with Adam, then the entire race was tainted with the sinfulness that happened with the situation that they got themselves into. With the one that was there, supposedly to guard the garden. So he didn't follow God's instructions for that either, in that sense, see. So now, when God tells Ezekiel, son of man, he's saying, son of Adam, son of the fallen one. He keeps reminding him of who he is. Every time that he talks to him, he reminds him of who he is. And how he got that way. In that sense. And so the enmity there is with children being born in sin. Not in the manner that the mother or father might have sinned, but in the manner of being born the way they were born. And that tells me that when Cain and Abel made their sacrifice to God, and the sacrifice was made, and God accepted Abel's sacrifice, and he didn't accept Cain's sacrifice, that it appeared that the things that came out of Cain's mindset was the same that came from Satan, in that sense. And when you look at Abel's name, that's, that Abel is the English version. It is Habal. And Habal means temporary.
Which he was.
Abel was temporary. He wasn't going to be there very long, and he wasn't. Because his brother killed him right off. And, you know, the repercussions from all of that. But here we are. You know, in that sense. So the devil in the New Testament and all of the times that the devil is mentioned, it is singular and it happens 61 times. And there's four things in the Strong's, the four numbers in the Strong's in the Greek. And it means accuser, false accuser, slander, and the word diablos. And that happens 34 times. And the number 1139 in the Greek means to be exercised by a demon. And that is 7 times. And then 1140, the word devil means a demonic being. And that is 18 times. And 1142 means a supernatural spirit of a bad nature. And that is 2 times, giving you a grand total of 61 times. Now, in the plural, it happens 50 times. 1139, which is to be exercised by a demon, was 6 times. A demonic being 40 times. And a supernatural spirit of a bad nature was 4 times, which gives you a total of 50 times in the plural, which means devils, plural. And that's how it's used in the New Testament, that way. Okay. Oh, I know we wasn't going to get very far. But let's go to 14, and we'll try to get it, and then we'll stop again there. It says, "Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth." And the cherub there is Memshaka, 37:42. And also it means kerub. "Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth." So that was his job in the garden. Thou art, or thou was, the anointed with outstretched wings, a supernatural being overshadowing and protecting the garden. Pretty clear, pretty concise as now as to what his job is, other than being the go-between between the heavenly beings and God the Father. That is a big downfall. That is a big drop in that situation. And he says this, "And I have set these things." So God said, I did it to you. Yeah. So he says, "I have set thee so when I had appointed thee." And that was a note that we had in 14 on there. So way back when the garden was created and he put him in it, that was the appointed thing that he was to do. He was there in the garden. And when he put Adam and Eve in the garden, here the tests begin. And here they were, enmity. Listen to this. Enmity between God and between the Shining One. Just like Genesis 3:15. Mm-hmm. I will put enmity between you, my seed and your seed. Yep. Okay. Now, so we've got that to take care of. He said, thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. You were there where Jehovah spoke to Moses on the mountain of Elohim in Horeb. Where the bush was on fire but didn't burn up. You remember when Moses was given the command to go get the people out of Egypt, and he says, who am I to say sent me? Who am I sent me? And God said, I am sent you. And so that has been down through the Old Testament times, the I am. Okay? And it was in Horeb, wherever Horeb was. And it says, thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Walk there is 1980, and it's the word holak. It means you walked up and down in the stones of fire the way you wanted to go. God says, I was not directing you at that point. You were directing yourself. In the mountain of God, he hadn't shown his true being, wherever that was. He hadn't shown his true being, so he had every right to go where he needed to go. So he was walking there as man learned when he could walk and would walk, that he could go where he wanted to go too. But if he didn't go the way God wanted him to go, he would have to pay the price. And it says that he walked up and down, or to and fro. And here, there is nothing more revealed than just that. In the midst of the stones of fire. And again, there was a set or a foundation on which to build from. And we generally call those cornerstones. And quite often in large buildings, it has the date and all the times of the starting on it. And he talks about the stones of fire. The stones there are the sets, are the number 68 in the Strong's. And the fire is 784. And it means it's ash. A-Y-S-H. And it's literally or figuratively. It is a burning, fiery, flaming hot fire. And that's all I really can tell you about that. But he talks about the stones of fire. And when I think of the stones of the covering and the stones of fire, it was almost like the fact that God was still creating within Satan until this problem came up. It was like it was an ongoing process that these colors could get different colors or as they were committed to this light and heat and whatever, that it didn't seem to bother Satan. And that his covering could change a little bit from time to time. It's things that we have no idea.
Yeah, what you're getting here is basically Ezekiel's getting an eyewitness description of what the literal
of the things
room of God looks like.
Yeah.
The heaven, the superabounding heavens where God is.
Yeah.
And he's getting a look at where our hope would be.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you get to that, you realize that, man, this being is, you could really say it's from other worlds almost. It's from other eras or.
Yeah, another dimension.
Dimensions that has been placed upon us. Now, how can we really deal with that? And so if we are born in sin, then, you know, we are the enmity. And as we grow up, we have this old nature that's already there. And as God would like to use us, then we're subjected to something brand new as a new nature. And look how sometimes we want to say no or to, you know, to kick against it. I think back to Paul when he says, when God asked Paul, how hard is it for you to kick against the prick?
Yes.
Why do you not want to change? You know.
Why don't you kick against something?
Why are you putting up this fight? If you want to call it a fight, but, you know, here it is. And we're subjected to the same thing. Everybody. Born in sin. And God says he wishes that none would be lost. He wished that all would be saved. So you see the battle. You see the war. You see where it's at. And you see what it entails. And you see the power and the wisdom of the old shining one. And he says, oh man, everything's okay. I'll take care of it. And he can make it look so good till it almost looks like the real thing, you know. But it's deception. And everywhere he went, God says he filled himself with this. That he just became fully engrossed in it. From the time he was the cherub that covereth. And, you know, as it goes on down the road, before he's done, he is fully possessed with it. He's going to do everything within his wisdom and understanding to get that place that he wanted. And that was to take the place of the Son of God.
And God reminded him of where you were. So you've walked up and down in the midst of the stones.
Right.
He said, but you'll say you shall be.
You've done all these things.
Cast down.
Well, you know, in verse 18, it tells you that he's going to be laid to waste in front of kings. And they're all going to see him, and they're going to see him go to ashes. And he's going to, and the fire is going to come from within him. So that tells you that when God put it in there, it was God's fire. In my view.
That's all there was.
and it was God's
fire.
That's
the only fire.
And when God uses his fire, it can fully take you completely away. There's going to be nothing left worth anything. And so that's his demise. That's what he knows he's going to come down to in one time. But you see, he's the adversary. He's all of these names that we've talked about and he's going to do that right.
And as though his demise happens on the earth. He said, I'll bring you to ashes.
When he sends him down to the earth and he's done with him, he is going to fall.
So we know that that's at some point after the time of Jacob's trouble.
Yeah.
Because that's when he gets cast down.
Right. That's going to be it. And so.
Doherty said, is it referring to spontaneous combustion? I think in this case it is from within him.
Yeah.
It's the internal spontaneous combustion.
Yeah.
And like you say, it'll be one of those fires that leaves nothing but just those ashes.
Yeah.
That
it burns nothing else.
Yeah.
And that they'll all see that. Yeah, Doherty and I got talking a little bit, Tony too, about spontaneous combustion a while back.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense. But yeah, that's basically how it goes.
That's how it reads.
And you know, when God says, or whoever it was said that so and so would be turned over to Satan for
destruction of
the flesh.
Paul talking about the one that had slept with his stepmom at Corinth.
Yes. Okay. So, you know.
He said, I ain't even heard of stuff like that in 1 to 10
times. That's easy to take place.
Yeah.
So, we'll pick it up and go on there the next time, but. I guess it's kind of hard to enjoy some of this stuff, but I don't think it's the enjoyment so much as learning the ins and outs of all this. But I had never thought about a demotion of Satan from being a go-between between God and the angelic beings. And reduced him down to garden. That, to me, blew my socks off my feet here. I said, oh, gee, a demotion here. That's something you don't normally see from God. What you normally see is something that goes better. But see, by his own, and it was his own doing that caused it, see. So God says, you know, I've set you, I give you this job. And now you've even turned from it further. There you go. So thank you for your time and the rambling zone that I did. But it's just a lot of stuff here that we need to bring out and talk about as we go along. And to find out more about the adversary, I truly believe that it's important that we understand what we're up against. And as we go along in this day and age, I come to realize more and more that it's really most important. Because it seems like the world is going in the direction where there's going to have to be an intervention. And it ain't too awful many years off, I'm afraid. And I'll just leave it at that for tonight. So thank you for being with us and continue to remember us in prayer. And Mama Ann's memory is getting a little worse as she goes along. We're probably going to have to go back and see about getting some medications changed and so on. So continue to remember us in that situation too. God bless you.